Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mondo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mondo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mondo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mondo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mondo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourself down.
That's right. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here!
Hello, I'm good, Joe.
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
All right, I want to welcome all of my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. That's whiterosesociety.org. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. And, of course, all my fans at rantsradio.com listening in on Thursdays and Sundays.
It's a proven fact. It's a proven fact that these forged documents existed and were being circulated amongst right-wing newspapers in Baghdad and around the world in the immediate aftermath of the fall of the Iraqi regime. Now, Senator, I gave my heart and soul to oppose the policy that you promoted. I gave my political life's blood to try to stop the mass killing of Iraqis by the sanctions on Iraq, which killed 1 million Iraqis, most of them children. Most of them died before they even knew that they were Iraqis, but they died for no other reason other than that they were Iraqis, with the misfortune to be born at that time. I gave my heart and soul to stop you committing the disaster that you did commit in invading Iraq. And I told the world that your case for the war was a pack of lies. I told the world that Iraq, contrary to your claims, did not have weapons of mass destruction. I told the world, contrary to your claims, that Iraq had no connection to Al-Qaeda. I told the world, contrary to your claims, that Iraq had no connection to the atrocity on 9/11/2001. I told the world, contrary to your claims, that the Iraqi people would resist a British and American invasion of their country and that the fall of Baghdad would not be the beginning of the end, but merely the end of the beginning. Senator, in everything I said about Iraq, I turned out to be right. And you turned out to be wrong. And 100,000 people have paid with their lives. 1,600 of them American soldiers sent to their deaths on a pack of lies. 15,000 of them wounded, many of them disabled forever on a pack of lies. If the world had listened to Kofi Annan, whose dismissal you demanded, if the world had listened to President Chirac, who you want to paint as some kind of corrupt traitor. If the world had listened to me and the anti-war movement in Britain, we would not be in the disaster that we are in today. Senator, this is the mother of all smokescreens. You are trying to divert attention from the crimes that you supported, from the theft of billions of dollars of Iraq's wealth. Have a look at the real oil for food scandal. Have a look at the 14 months You were in charge of Baghdad the first 14 months when $8.8 billion of Iraq's wealth went missing on your watch. Have a look at Halliburton and the other American corporations that stole not only Iraq's money, but the money of the American taxpayer. Have a look at the oil that you didn't even meter, that you were shipping out of the country and selling, the proceeds of which went who knows where. Have a look at the $800 million you gave to American military commanders to hand out around the country without even counting it or weighing it. Have a look at the real scandal breaking in the newspapers today, revealed in the earlier testimony in this committee, that the biggest sanctions busters were not me or Russian politicians or French politicians. The real sanctions busters were your own companies with the connivance of your own government.
And that is George Galloway of the Respect Party in England. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is Joe Vecchio. And I'm here with Phyllis Euster, my friend from CountPaperBallots.com. How you doing, Phyllis?
Pretty good, Joe. It's good to be here.
Good to have you back. And we're going to talk about some of the things you've been doing on the election reform circuit. But let's talk about Mr. Galloway's speech. For those of you who have been living under a rock, and for those of you on Rant Radio in particular who are right-wingers, and I know there's a bunch of you little right-wingers on that network. Not that I don't mind, because, you know, Smokehouse is a pretty cool guy. And Sumerian is, of course, a very, very hard left. But even so, for you guys, I wanted you to hear that speech because it really was a killer. Now, for those of you likes that aren't aware, George Galloway is a minister in England. For those of you who don't know anything about the British system, they have a parliamentary system. It's like voting for a congressman, and the congressmen decide who's going to be the president, or in this case, prime minister. Those are the ones that set the agenda. Those are the ones that create the government. And Galloway was he was in Labour, which is Tony Blair's party, and he was so anti-war that he was actually kicked out of the Labour Party. But he ran again on his own ticket, the Respect Party, and won in a landslide in his district because the Iraqi war is extremely unpopular among the British. And there were some forged documents going around that saying that he was getting kickbacks from the oil for food program that the United Nations had in Iraq. And he knew it was all BS. And he went out there and he knew he was going to be testifying before the Senate committee there, led by Norm Coleman, the scum who went in on Paul Wellstone's grave. That's how they operate. They got to kill you now in order to make sure you don't win. And that's like the second big-time Democrat or important Democratic congressman that died in a mysterious plane crash just a few months before an election. Who was the other one? The guy in Louisiana. I forget the name. But at any rate, and the guy's wife won. And that was the one... That was the one Ashcroft couldn't beat. He couldn't beat a dead man in a re-election. Galloway came to the Senate to speak, and he said before he came that he was going to hand it to him. And of course, the Republicans on the committee, with the exception of Coleman, and Coleman still is a coward anyway, because Coleman is just, he's a waste of protoplasm. But all the other Republicans stayed away. They didn't want to face this guy. And he just let him have it. And that got heard all around the world. That even got played in American media. I was surprised it even got airplay there. But that was a real shocker. You know, these people aren't used to being talked to like that, are they, Phyllis?
No, I tell you, when I heard it, I was so blown away that I wanted to have the man's baby. That was just my initial
reaction.
And
you're a lesbian.
And I'm a lesbian. So that tells you how much I like the speech. But I do think it was a speech that was heard around the world. And I think that it's really sad that America does not have democratic leadership that can say that kind of honesty so boldly that we have to depend on a British citizen to come in and basically kick us around and tell us what the real story is.
Well, you know, and Coleman made a veiled threat afterwards saying that if we find out, you know, he was lying, then, you know, the consequences will have to be paid. Could you imagine if they tried to put this guy in prison? Could you imagine what the repercussions would be if they were to try to arrest this guy on Trump, especially on trumped-up charges, which you know they're going
to. I'm here to tell you, I'm 1/8 Scotch, Scotch heritage. And when I saw the look on that man's face when he sat down and just started speaking from his heart, you don't piss off a Scotsman.
Right.
Anybody that knows, you know, that has spent any time at all in Scotland knows you don't piss them off. And I think it was great, though.
Scottish get pissed off easily. Let's face it.
Well, but you don't.
They got temper.
You don't want to be on the receiving end of their temper.
That's for sure. And you know they say it so they got such a great nasty streak in them when they do that.
Yeah.
You know, just using, you know, we're going to take your entrails and we're going to wrap it around your neck and hang you with them. You know, I mean, that really sounds much worse when you know, not when the French go, ah, we are going to take your entrails, huh? No, that doesn't sound tough. That sounds like you're a little wimpy guy, you know. But here's the Scottish guy, oh, we're going to cut your arm off and use it to beat you senseless with, your lousy, limey scum, you know.
Yeah.
It just sounds that much better. And Galloway just let him have it. And I was so happy to hear that. And the American press was like, oh, my God, how could he say that? Oh, you know, and our press is like, oh, yes, sir, Mr. Bush. Oh, look, Mr. Bush said the sky is green. Well, the sky must be green because Mr. Bush said so. And that's what our fucking press is like. And here's this guy just comes and tells it like it is, man. And that's what we need more of in this country, more people to tell him like
it is. Even more importantly, he's obviously an anti-war guy that got elected.
Well, sure. Well, again,
how many anti-war people are standing up for us right now?
Well, that's because in America, an anti-war guy would not be elected dog catcher.
Yeah.
You know, Dean got put in his head at the DNC, but that's not like a general election. You know, you know, this country is very militaristic. We've always been very militaristic. And
well, Joe, you know, I'll beg to differ. I think that if people had an actual choice of voting, then it'd be interesting who they actually choose for office.
Yeah, but the thing about it is, though, there's still a big streak in this country of let's go out there and kick their asses.
Yeah.
I mean, even among them. I mean, I'm not a pacifist. I don't claim to be a pacifist. I certainly believe when it comes time to fight, when things are necessary to fight, you got to go up there and fight. And if I believed, and if I had been convinced, and you could have convinced me, you know, that Iraq was a real serious threat to this country, that they actually had nuclear weapons with missiles that they could launch against us or one of our allies, you know, I'd be take them out before they get us. That would be my attitude. But it was so obvious that they weren't a threat. It was so obvious that it was just, you know, George Bush trying to get his little dick hard, you know, with the thought of being better than his father. He's not better than his, but he's not better than anybody. And he's like the capstone of this big pyramid of money and power that, you know, it's interchangeable. You know, you can take any idiot. That's why Republicans like these guys like Schwarzenegger. These people who are politically naive and stupid, they just tell them what to do and they do it. You know, and then sometimes they go off out on their own a little bit and they act like, and every time Bush has stepped out on his own, he's made some sort of stupid mistake. And you know that Grove and Cheney got to pull his ass in. Now, what I love about watching the British Parliament, and I watch it sometimes on television, on C-SPAN, is how they have what Prime Minister has, what, questions day or answers day or something like that. And he has to stand up there while the House of Commons, which is, I guess, the equivalent of the United States Congress, because they have the House of Commons and House of Lords. The House of Commons hits the Prime Minister with questions, and the Prime Minister is obliged to answer each one. Can you imagine George Bush standing up in front of, you know, Wellstone when Wellstone was alive, who was really, you know, Wellstone was as much like Galloway as anybody we had, Congressman Waxman out in California. Could you imagine George Bush sitting in front of those people and just listening to that? They can't do anything without having a completely and totally controlled environment. And when you have a situation where you don't have total control of who's asking the questions, they don't know what to do. That's why they control the media. They kicked Helen Thomas out. I didn't realize that, but they actually kicked Helen Thomas out.
Yeah, that was a crime. I mean, they moved her from the front row to the back row and then out.
Yeah.
And she is such a patriot of the press. I mean, everybody loves Helen Thomas.
And she's been doing this. It's not like, you know, she's somebody new. No, she's been doing this for like 40-something years. The first president she covered was Kennedy.
Well, she's good.
Yeah.
She writes good stuff.
And but you know, they're like, well, we can't have you because you actually ask questions. I mean,
this chapter of history, I think the quote is that when we study this chapter in history, we'll find media silence as being the murderer of democracy.
Yeah, yeah, and it's really sickening. But hats off to George Galloway.
Yeah,
for going out there and just speaking his mind and just kicking ass, and you just see the expression on Coleman's face, like. And he made that comment about, you know, he's going to, you know, if we find out he's lied, you know, there's going to be repercussions, you know, there's going to be consequences. What the hell are they going to do to him?
Yeah.
Are they going to try to arrest him? I'd love to see that. I'd love to see
well,
that.
What it shows, and I'm hoping the Democrats were watching more so than the Republicans, what it shows is that the Democrats need to grow a backbone because mm-hmm. apparently when you speak the truth, it has a way of reverberating throughout the halls of Congress, you know, throughout the halls of the country,
let
really.
Me say this, because the guy who was the biggest one who was speaking out, and he wasn't necessarily anti-war either, and that was Howard Dean during the campaign.
Yes.
And he was the one who was most ridiculed by the Democrats
yeah.
for anything else. And Jeff Dazinger, the political cartoonist, who I usually love, apparently Dean made a comment about how Tom DeLay ought to be arrested, which he ought to be arrested because of all the, you know, the kickbacks and the things that he's been doing, the orchestrating of using the Department of Homeland Defense to get the Texas state congressman into session when they wouldn't go in to keep the Republicans in the Texas Senate from Texas State House from redistricting the whole state. And he was, you know, DeLay, who was not a state senator or a state congressman, was using his influence to change that. You know, DeLay ought to be in jail, or at very least he ought to be removed from his position and put on trial for some of the kickback stuff that he's been doing. And Howard Dean says that. And here is Jeff Dazinger, Danziger, criticizing him for it. I had a picture of Howard with his mouth running away from him, chasing after his mouth. And it's like, come on, man. You speak truth of power, and this is how you get treated. I'm just a little upset that.
Yeah, but Dean is all of us that speak the truth are living in a broken system. And sure. when that system gets fixed, because it has to get fixed, anybody that runs away with power the way Bush has, he's eventually going to fall over a cliff, and they're all going to just really screw up so bad that the system will snap back like a rubber band. And I'm here to tell you, the first people that are on the chopping block when democracy snaps back and we get control of our government again are the DeLays, the Cheneys. These guys will go to jail
and,
eventually.
You know,
they need
I hope
to.
So. I hope so. I'm so skeptical that anything's going to happen to them because we're living in such tough times right now. It's difficult to see. And it's like, I can imagine that there were, you know, I know there were a lot of people in Germany who did not like Adolf Hitler and who really either did not want to get involved in politics or who just thought that what he was doing was dangerous for the country and for the world, but who couldn't say anything because, you know, they were much more stringent about it. But we're almost getting to that point, too, and I want to play a clip in a second here about that. But the thing about it is, I'm sure there were people in Germany who didn't like Hitler, but they couldn't say anything because of what was going on in there. And I think we're kind of in that same position now. And they wondered if Hitler was ever going to get punished for what he did. And they were probably just as certain as I am that nothing would happen. I'm very certain that you're right, that eventually it's going to pull back.
But history, yeah, I mean, look at Milosevic. Now, granted, they should have done more to him, but Milosevic, you know, is in jail and mm-hmm. you know, for international crimes. Granted, anytime something ends up at The Hague, it's like whip me with a wet noodle. But at the end of the day, you know, Saddam is under control. You know, they're... But not tortured. That's the key. Is that when
You don't think Hussein went through the same kind of torture that we went through these other guys? If he was such a dangerous guy, why didn't they do that stuff to him?
Right. I don't. I really don't understand why America gave Saddam back after pissing and moaning about what a bad guy he was. That was kind of lily livered in my mind. I mean, Rumsfeld and all those guys like to act like such badasses, but at the end of the day, where is Saddam? Where is he? Is he in jail? I mean, we handed him back, and then there was no more stories about him.
They were supposed to have a trial, but they haven't been able to do
anything. It's kind of like Osama. They like to keep these things open so that they can piss and moan about it and use it against us to do all sorts of other terrible things around the world. Well, but I'd like to talk about North Korea and South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
You know that they've opened talks again.
Yeah, they're real concerned about North Korea and all that. Let me say this
okay.
before we get into that, though.
Okay.
I want to say that while I do think that the Bush people will get taken out, I don't think it's going to happen by Americans. I think it's going to take an outside
force. Oh, totally.
Force.
I think Galloway was the beginning of the international community paying attention and saying, I know I just know that there are other countries looking very closely at us because we've had other countries, let's just say that, I won't tell you which ones, contact us in the election reform movement because they want to know the truth about how the election was rigged. And so there is a transfer of information.
What, do they want to try it themselves?
No, there's a transfer of information so that there can be some sort of international oversight.
Well, it's obvious to me that the European Union is not going to take this lightly. I mean, it's one thing to try to declare war on Iraq, but try to take out the European Union militarily, you're just not going to be able to do it. And you know something? If China were to try to take Taiwan now, and they managed to get on the island somehow, and we wouldn't be able to push them back.
Well, let me tell you, that's why I wanted to talk about North Korea. Yeah. I have this theory that we've taken all our Navy boats and put them in the
Persian Gulf.
And so my fear is that we have either not enough or no significant ships and air power off in the China Sea. And so what bothers me is North Korea is, for many years, they've been not willing to talk to South Korea. Well, they opened talks the other day. Well, you know what? Before any invasion has ever happened in history, whether it was World War II, World War I,
they had talks.
You always had talks, meaning it's a good way to it's a decoy, like, oh, we love you, we're making up, kissy nice face kind of thing. And, you know, the North Korean situation is so bad that I'm fearful that they will do that, and then they will shoot whatever boat we have down out of the water, and then we're going to be stuck with North Korea literally walking in, not even having to fight, but walking in and taking over South Korea.
Well, you know what?
That's my prediction.
I don't know if they'll walk in and take it. What they probably will do is nuke Seoul, because Seoul is very close. I mean, they've got missiles.
They don't have to nuke it.
And
if they shoot our boat down, who's going to fight them? China will not fight them.
Well, the thing about it is they could just do a lot of damage. I mean, Kim Jong-il just might do it to show that he's a big tough guy.
Yeah, that's true.
And they could also nuke Tokyo if they want to nuke Tokyo. They've got missiles that'll go that far.
I think they're going to save the nuke, though, as a bargaining position, more so than using it.
Well, you know, and I hate to say it this way, because it really sounds like I'm supporting the North Koreans, which I do not, but, you know, I'm almost glad that they got nuclear power, because if they didn't have a nuclear weapon, then we'd probably be in there already. You know, I mean, that seems to be the one guarantee, because the Bush people, they want to go in where they think it's going to be a cakewalk. And what they're discovering now in Iraq, I mean, publicly they won't say that, but what they're discovering now in Iraq is that you simply can't have an army of occupation. It simply doesn't work. And everything has fallen apart there, but, you know, you can't hear them talk about it. Anyway, listen, let's go into a little break here.
Okay.
We're going to have Stupid Boss Tricks, and Phyllis, you got a Stupid Boss Tricks for us. And then we'll be back later. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Tucker Joe Radio Show.
Hey. Your stupid minds! Stupid! Stupid!
Hey. You're always this stupid, or did you take lessons?
Hey, stupid!
That's right, it's time once again for another episode of that part of the show where we point out how incompetent your boss is. And we have Phyllis Euster here, who's going to give us a stupid boss tricks of her own. Phyllis, what you got for us?
Okay, I was a co-op student. I was 17 years old working for a company called Lanier. And I had the wildest boss.
Is that a copy company?
Yeah, they used to make copiers, but they're also known for word processing. And they were also known for the first recalled computer.
Okay.
Meaning they were so bad at it, they had to recall it. But anyway, it was funny. My boss would read these books called Management by Objectives. And they would give her all these phrases to say. And you knew that every night she read a different phrase and would come in and practice it on us. So the first phrase that we had to hear was, get your ducks in a row. So every day...
Management by cliche.
Management by cliche. So the first one was, get your ducks in a row. And she would use it literally in every other sentence. Phyllis, I want you to get your ducks in a row because the OSRs are coming in and we need to have our ducks in a row in order for them to be able to have their ducks in a row when they meet with the customer.
What you should have done was gone to the pet store and got a whole bunch of little baby ducks.
We actually did. So what happened was that Friday, okay, there was a woman named Cynthia that really hated our boss. And so that Friday, Cynthia came in with a T-shirt on, and it had all these ducks in a row that were all yellow ducks, except for one black duck that was facing the other way. When she walked in the room, everybody instantly knew, that because we would make jokes about Jennifer's little MBE language.
And I told you not to mention names, so that's okay.
Okay, that's all right. Just Jennifer. But so anyway.
Was Jennifer black?
No.
Okay.
When Cynthia walked in, everybody in the room started laughing. And then when Jennifer came in, we all started laughing at her. And she didn't understand why we were laughing. And then she saw the shirt, and she was pissed. Because then she got it. And then the other thing she liked to say was touch base. So we used to make fun of, is she busy playing baseball, or is she running a company? So that was kind of my crazy trick.
I hate when people who do... We had a guy when I was in the Air Force. We had a guy named Jim, nice enough guy. And he was ready to leave. And He used to call, we worked in PMEL, Precision Measurement Electronics, and basically a piece of equipment would come in, we would calibrate it and send it back. And he used to joke when equipment was going bad and we had to reject them. You know, he used to joke about PMEL, where equipment comes in but it doesn't go out. You know, I call it the black hole.
Yep.
And our boss hated that. And when he was leaving, like the day before he left, he had on a baseball cap from the movie The Black Hole from Disney. It said The Black Hole.
I love it. I love it.
And the boss was pissed off. But management by cliche is a really wonderful boss trick, because they do that so often, don't they? They're not thinking about actual ways to improve efficiency or to make a better workplace. No, they're interested in having a little cliche and making themselves feel good.
Yes.
You know. Thanks, Phyllis, for that.
You're welcome.
And we'll be back. The next one will be show 100, so I don't know what we're going to do for show 100 on Stupid Boss Tricks. But that's it for this episode of
Stupid Boss Tricks.
Hang on, let me just tell you what I'm thinking. I'm thinking about killing Michael Moore. And I'm wondering if I could kill him myself or if I would need to hire somebody to do it. I think I could. I think he could be looking me in the eye, you know? And I could just be choking the life out. Is this wrong? I stopped wearing my What Would Jesus Band Do? And I've lost all sense of right and wrong now. I used to be able to say, yeah, I'd kill Michael Moore. And then I'd see the little band, What Would Jesus Do? And then I'd realize, oh, he wouldn't kill Michael Moore. At least it wouldn't choke him to death and, you know. Well, I'm not sure.
And welcome back to the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And I have not yet been targeted for execution. Yet, that's only because I'm not as big as a Michael Moore or George Soros or a federal judge who votes against the right-wing agenda. Of course, I'm here with Phyllis Euster from CountPaperBallots.com. Hi again, Phyllis.
Hi there. How are you?
It's almost like we were here for a couple of days and you're still here talking. But it's just one big segment that we record all
cool.
at once. Now, let me ask you something. Because I talk about how it's dark times and stuff like that. Do I sound like I'm too negative sometimes? Do I come across as
being
negative?
You're realistic, and I think your realism is negative, because we're living in negative times. But what I'd like to see is people who complain about the current situation to offer up what the citizens can do, like getting in the streets, being activists, just basically speaking out against this craziness.
Yeah, because I had a guy on the Bart Cop chat room. I won't say his name. He's a nice guy, and I know him. And I've known him for quite some time, but he was bitching at me for moaning and whining and stuff like that. And it had to do with the Newsweek thing, because, you know, Newsweek, quote-unquote, retracted the story. Basically, they were bullied out of reporting the truth, because the stuff that was going on, the torture that's been going on in Guantanamo Bay.
Oh, everybody's covered.
Yeah, specifically the tossing the Koran pages into the toilet. I mean, that's stuff that we've known about for the last 2 or 3 years. So it's not like it was even new news. But they were bullied, just like the CBS people were bullied and pressured into backing off from a story that was true.
About Bush.
And it's the same way. And now we're hearing, and that guy was Glenn Beck. The little clip we played, and that was on his radio show. And according to MediaMatters.org, Glenn Beck is syndicated by the Premier Radio Network, which is owned by Clear Channel, our good friends, on more than 160 radio stations across the country to an estimated audience of 6 million listeners. He has previously falsely accused Moore of taking help and money from Hezbollah, which is the religious jihadist out in Palestine. Who are fighting the Israelis, and called Michael Berg, who criticized the Bush administration after his son Nick was beheaded in Iraq, despicable and a scumbag. And this is very. But you see now, the right wing talk is getting much a little bit more violent, because they've been threatening judges.
A little bit.
Well, they're getting they've taken it up a notch. They've taken it up a notch because they used to kind of – and Ann Coulter's been kind of saying this stuff anyway. I mean, didn't she say after 9/11 that she wishes that they would have flown the plane into the New York Times? And she was proud of that. She didn't even try to hide it. She didn't even try to deny it. She was proud of that.
Well, they're doing more than taking it up a notch, Joe. They're controlling all the media outlets, and they're essentially inciting violence. And they're telling the churches – to start killing judges, okay? Mm-hmm. And you've got people that already, judges are already dealing with not so sane people in their courtroom.
Right.
But for those not so sane people to get there after hearing an incitation against a judge by these crazy right-wing criminals that have taken control of our government through election fraud, then what you've got is a situation where you're creating violence.
And you had the same – it was the same type of situation, the same hate talk that drove somebody to murder, that drove Lee Harvey Oswald to murder John Kennedy, Sirhan to kill Robert Kennedy, mm-hmm. although he had his own reasons. And no one's still really 100% sure about what the goings-on are with that. With JFK, it's just a question of whether or not Oswald – acted alone or whether he was part of a coordinated group. But it was also that, but you can definitely say it was that kind of hatred, talk hate, that drove Timothy McVeigh to put a car bomb in front of the Oklahoma City federal building there and blow that up, killing a lot of children. A lot of children
were
killed.
Well, in a normal judicial world, these people, Tom DeLay, Bill Frist, would be in jail mm-hmm. because they're doing slanderous libel against respected judges. Okay, that's against the law.
Right.
But we're not living in a normal world.
No.
And one of the things I want to point out is that the only way to get back in that normal world, I hate to keep coming back to election fraud, is to fix the system where the citizens can actually choose the assholes that are in charge. Mm-hmm. And right now, we don't have that choice.
And I really think if it had been fair elections in 2000 or 2004, we would not be in the situation.
We wouldn't be nowhere near it. I mean, we let the judges put George Bush into office the first time. But let me point something out. I was at the Ohio teach-in on May 7th, okay? I went up to Columbus in my car, and I taught a workshop on how to audit a state because I've bought, I bought 28 counties worth of data in Georgia with my own money,
right.
And we're mounting basically lawsuits against Diebold and everybody else I can find to sue in this crummy little state. But anyway, the bottom line is I met a guy named Paul Harmon that ran for judge in Licking County, Ohio. And the video is on my website. It's www.countpaperballots.com. And if you click the little video link, you'll see Paul Harmon's story. This man lost by 189 votes. And yet, when he did a recount, he found a 40% undervote because they were using those old lever machines.
Mm-hmm.
And the chads were so bad that literally 40% of the votes became no votes.
Right.
When it was clear that the person had voted for him, but they couldn't count it because it was not clearly marked on the ballot.
Right.
And so I know that's an outstanding problem, but that's the kind of thing that the Board of Elections person should say the citizen's intent was for the judge.
Right.
That's where you bring humans into the process. But we're so busy automating our elections to the point that one convicted felon from Diebold controls how 36 million votes are flipped. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is we're spending $30 billion of HAVA money rather than spending it on people to honestly count our votes in the trenches, precinct by precinct. We're going to spend it on optical scans that have known problems.
Right.
We're going to spend it on touch screens that have known problems of flipping from Kerry to Bush.
Well, we're a lazy democracy. We don't want to make any effort into it at all. And while there are certain facets of it that I think we should make as easy as possible, like getting people registered and the process of casting your ballot in itself, I think should be relatively easy and accessible to as many eligible citizens as we can get, and making the eligibility requirements easy, too. I mean, that part of it should all be easy, but we demand that it all be counted and we know about it 2 minutes after the polls close. And it's like, look, take our time. There's no need to rush.
No.
You know, there is absolutely no need to rush. If we need to take 2 or 3 days to count these things, let's take 2 or 3 days.
Or count the president and get that out quickly and then count the other races slower.
You know, or
there's so many ways to do it better.
You know, yeah, and we just don't want to do it. I had an idea that, you know, we talked about the paper ballots thing. About maybe we should have, we'll have will have the ballots that have like little tear strips, and you have you can use the Diebold machines to just basically make it a big expensive pencil. But you have a printer up there that you literally print the name. It literally prints the name of the person that you voted for, not check marks in a box where you have to. It would literally print it. It would be a little tab thing, a little perforation where you can tear that part off, and you just have a whole bunch of people down the line, one representing each particular race, and they tear it off, and you got a little pole there with maybe a couple holes in it or something, or the paper has a hole in it, and you have a little stick pin there or something. Okay, this is a vote for Kerry. It clearly says Kerry, and you stick it on that one, and the one for Bush goes on its own pole or whatever. And that way you can have a very clear...
I like the idea of separate ballot boxes. The thing is, you're going to have people that are stupid that are going to put Senate races in the president box. So that, I mean, that's a good direction, but I don't want you to recommend that we use Diebold as a great big expensive electronic pencil.
Well, fortunately, the machines are already bought in
Georgia's case. No, we're going to turn it around. But you know, Ohio right now is they've got money on the table, and Ken Blackwell, the evil person that he is really forcing the counties to buy. He's putting just crazy deadlines on them to purchase these DRE machines. So what we've done as citizens is we sent letters out, and we're getting really good response. We've gotten – there are four counties that are suing Blackwell for his dates because they're basically cramming Diebold down everybody's throats, and they're not following certification deadlines, and they're also not – they're not doing a lot of stuff, but that's just typical.
But the thing about it is and as much, as important as this is, it's really what I wanted to talk about. As far as this is concerned, is that because of stuff like this, because of the rigging of the elections and stuff like that, is the reason that they can get away with threatening to kill people.
Right.
Because what Glenn Beck said, he should be arrested for. You're threatening the life of somebody. Threatening somebody's life, it doesn't matter who it is. Yeah. If you publicly threaten somebody's life like that, you should be thrown in jail.
In the olden days, the FBI would have him in because anybody...
They would have him in if he said that about a right-wing guy.
And truthfully, I bet the FBI and the CIA want to do that. And I bet you that secretly who we have on our side are the Secret Service, the CIA, the FBI, because they've seen their budgets get sucked over into Donald Rumsfeld's little playpen.
And, you know, it's kind of scary.
And they're pissed off.
It's kind of scary to think that the CIA may be on our side because, you know, the CIA has been responsible for a lot of evil
shit. Who cares
of its own,
if that's what it takes? Now, the FBI is pissed about Guantanamo Bay because they were addressing the military people up in FBI uniforms to try to scare them.
Right.
Well, the FBI did not like being impersonated.
Right.
Then that's when you really insult somebody that spent 30 years being an FBI person.
This is what happens when you're dealing with fanatics, though. I mean, these people are absolutely friggin' insane. Even Bob Dole was talking about it once. He said, I wish some of the people on our side would realize that we have opponents and not enemies. These people see us as enemies of America. And they either see that, they either really see us like that, or they're just saying that in order to get people riled up.
These people represent maybe what, 2 or 5% of the total population?
They're extremely loud 2 or 5%.
It doesn't matter that they're loud. What I don't like is that the election makes everybody think that it's 50%. 50% don't want to kill Michael Moore.
Right.
In fact, I don't know how many Republicans I met that watched the show and said, oh my God, I can't believe Bush was such an idiot right after the first plane hit the tower.
Mm-hmm.
That he sat there reading a book to a kid. If that wasn't the most staged thing on the planet, then I don't know what is.
Yeah, it was either staged or he really was just like, oh my God, what am I going to do? You can just almost see the wheels turning.
But let me bring up the kind of legal bantering. Ken Blackwell, who's the Secretary of State of Ohio, when 37 citizens brought a lawsuit saying, you've totally rigged Ohio. Ohio totally went for Ohio. We know for a fact now that Ohio went for Kerry. And I have the statistics. I went up there. I took all of Licking County's statistics home. I know for a fact that Kerry won Ohio. But here's the deal. When 37 citizens did a lawsuit, Ken Blackwell and Tom Petro, the Attorney General for Ohio, came back with a $100,000 sanction against four people, Susan Truitt, Bob Fotrakis, Peter Pekarkas, and Cliff Arnebeck. Well, guess what? Today is a great day because they dropped the sanctions lawsuit. And what that means, Joe, it's huge. Because what it means is we're now free to go and do other lawsuits. And it means that those four people don't have this thing hanging over their head. But that's the way they play. They play really not fair. When the sanctions came out was literally days before we were going to have Ken Blackwell have to stand up before a judge and answer questions. And he doesn't want to answer questions because he knows he's going to have to lie.
Right. Well, of course, they do that with impunity anyway, so I really don't see what difference it makes.
But enough citizens suing, Joe, and I'm here to tell you, and let's just say that I'm working with some people up there that get it.
Okay, let's throw a hypothetical here. Okay, let's throw a hypothetical.
Okay.
Let's say everything goes exactly the way you would like them to go in Ohio, that they get the lawsuits and they prove conclusively that Kerry won Ohio.
Okay.
Enough to, you know, make somebody have to take action about overturning the election.
Okay.
Do you think that will actually happen? Do you think they'll be able to? What do you think? You know, because that's never happened before in American history.
I think that what will happen is that the people inside the government will have to wrestle the government back away from Bush. I do not think an impeachment process will work. I do not think that the Republicans are going to, they're going to go to their grave voting for Bush because they're essentially political animals that want to win office again.
Well, I had a post.
So I think it's going to have to be through a criminal process where we literally storm into the White House with FBI, CIA, Secret Service, and we literally forcibly take the White House back.
Or as I mentioned earlier, a war. And I did a post a little while ago called "Are You Americans or Are You Republicans? Are You Republicans or Americans?" And realistically, really the last gasp, the last gate keeping these guys from doing completely and totally everything they want are a very few, quote-unquote, moderate Republicans in the Senate. Because if the Republicans succeed in their nuclear option, or as I like to call it, the suicide option, because they'd be committing political suicide, not so much for their own party, but for the American Republic completely, it would be suicide. Because that opens up a whole can of worms crossing a line you don't want to cross.
No.
You know what I mean? But they are really our last best hope, because if they cave, then it's all lost.
Well, here's the good news.
Let me finish. Let me continue what I wanted to say. But now it slipped out of my mind. But the thing about it is, these guys have to decide. That's what I want to say. These guys have to decide: are they Republicans first or are they Americans first? And my feeling about Republicans has always been that they believe that they're Republicans first and Americans when they're convenient. And you can have all sorts of variations on that theme. Well, they don't believe that if you're not a Republican, then you're not an American. That's not quite the same thing. I don't really think these people give a shit about anything but their own short-term goals. And because they only think in the short term, they're completely wrecking anything that goes on above and beyond their lifetimes. So anyway, I'm sorry. I didn't mean
to interrupt. Well, here's what my friend said, that for the nuclear option to work, I did hear that the Republicans and Democrats gave both parties the freedom to vote their conscience versus the party.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I think we have more spineless jellyfish on the Democratic aisle side mm-hmm. of the aisle, and telling them that they could vote their conscience, I think hurts us, because we've got wimps like Lieberman. We've got complete sellouts like, and I don't remember his name, but the guy from Florida that's offering up sort of a compromise to Bush's Social Security.
Yeah.
We've got just real assholes like that are in it for the power. They're in it for the money. And the
Well, they're like Neville Chamberlain. Neville Chamberlain was a British prime minister who tried to negotiate deals with Hitler. And he found out the hard way that you don't negotiate deals with fanatics. You do not compromise with them because there is no compromising. Compromise to them is you give them everything that they want.
The sad thing is the only real Democrat that's had any backbone is a woman named Barbara Boxer.
Yeah.
Everyone else, I would literally stick them all in a box and shut the door.
Including Kerry. Kerry's turned out to be such a wuss about
okay.
the whole election.
I'm over Kerry. Kerry is dead as far as I'm concerned.
Politically
speaking, if we could put anyone else in the White House besides Kerry, I would. Kerry was behind the attack ads for Howard Dean. He literally took a walk on all of the election activists in Ohio. He took a walk. He had a chance to join in the recount lawsuit, and he, like a coward, he walked out on us. And we will never forget that. And I don't care what you say about Kerry, that some people go, oh, well, it wasn't – it doesn't matter. It's May 18th, and he hasn't said a word about election fraud.
And this is where – when people talk about me being negative, this is where they mostly talk about, because I mostly talk about our own, both the political leadership and the activist leadership, as you were. Because all of the work that's being done, the people like you and the people at DefendersOfDemocracy.com, Ginny Howard and Mark Sawyer and all those people, all of these people are the ones that are bearing all of this burden. The political leadership is not.
It's a financial burden. Look, Susan Truitt has lost, relationships over this. We've lost our jobs. We lost money. It is a huge burden. And just so you know, Joe, there are 70 citizen organizations out there and over 50 nationwide election fraud organizations. This is 2 or 3 or 5 or 20 people in every state all across the country that have quit their jobs to do this full time.
Right.
That are putting up websites that are pissed off about election
and
fraud.
And it's not just nationally; it's locally too.
Oh,
we got
big
a lady
time.
Here. She's the chairman of the communications committee of the DeKalb County Democratic Party. And we're just talking about County Democratic Party, and they're having a staff meeting. In fact, that's going on a steering committee meeting, which is going on even as we speak. And she isn't going to announce her resignation. And she said the reason why she's going to announce her resignation is because she's fed up with the Democrats, the way the leadership is running things. We have no leadership. We have so much citizen underground support. And let me talk, and I want to talk about this for a second, because this is one of the things. All these people with the rose-colored glasses, a lot of these people talking about they were before the election how great Kerry's going to do and how much he's going to win. And I'm just sitting there shaking my head saying, you know Kerry's never going to see this Oval Office. You know it's simply not going to happen. They're not going to allow it to happen because they're fanatics and we're not. And it's the problem is with our leadership. And they say, oh, don't be so negative. You can't be negative. You know, let me tell you something. The rose-colored glasses you're wearing are colored that way with blood. You know? And it's the blood of people who
every
have died
liberal, every Democrat needs to have a wake-up call, and they need to realize that there's been a coup d'etat and that their country has been taken over by these computer machines called voting machines. And we all need to wake up and realize that it's time to take our country back. But I will say this. I learned a really cool trick in Ohio. There is this thing that you can do called a Democratic club.
Mm-hmm.
You just form a club, and you invite Democrats over. Mostly, they will be people who are disgruntled. And what you do is you raise money. You have bake sales. You have community events. You go to parades. And you can do things like wear T-shirts that advocate your ideas. And if there are Democratic candidates running, you can choose to give your money to them or not. So you have complete control as a club versus being a part of the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
You can say, look, I'm a Democrat. I'm never going to stop being a Democrat, Joe. I could be really pissed off with my party, but I'm a very proud Democrat. I will not stop having the values, the olden time values, meaning helping your neighbor. The old time values of being a Democrat, which is, you know, small business. If we could just invest in small business, this country would go through an economic boom, just like what Clinton did. I mean, but at the end of the day, if you could have these clubs, then I think you could rejuvenate the Democratic Party.
Well, but we still need leadership, though, and that's just the thing.
But the leaders will come from the citizens.
Well, but that takes a lot of time to build up from scratch. And if we had had any kind of competent leadership, dramatic leadership, people like George Galloway, who got in there with a little fire and brimstone, Howard Dean was like that. And even Howard Dean isn't as tough as Galloway was, because Galloway, I guess, felt freer knowing that he never has to run for an election.
But here's the weird part. What if,
but we
what
need
if,
people with fire like
what
that.
What if we have people with fire, and they're saying things in the Congress all the time, and it's not getting put out in our media?
Well, the media is just another big problem, too. But you know what? People are tuning out the media, I think. The newspaper subscriptions and newspaper readership dropping like a stone.
You know, the only newspaper I read is RossStory.com because they have some of the coolest, most up-to-date information. They really break what I consider to be serious news.
ConsortiumNews.com is also very good. CommonDreams.org.
And blogs. I hate to say it, but I depend on blogs now.
Yeah, but you know, I have a problem with some of the bloggers because some of the – now you have a couple of blogs now that are like celebrity blogs that I call them. Daily Coast and Atrios. And they don't have readers so much as they have groupies.
Yeah.
No. I mean, you always see it whenever they have a new thing where they have a comment. There's always some guy who's got to be the first one to make a comment, and they're like, first, you know, and that, you know, that's just being a groupie, you know, that has nothing to do with the prep. And they're the ones who are talking about how great it is that they're getting all this information out, you know, about the Newsweek story and about the truth behind it. But you know what? Nobody else is listening. They're preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
And you got to go outside of the choir in order to get that. And they don't understand that. And what we have to do is we have to take our feelings and we have to turn them into some more coherent action. But we can't do that if we don't have anybody who has the financial backing to put stuff into action so that you personally, like I know you've put a few $1,000s into what you're doing and you're unemployed. I know I've gone broke because I've taken time out from doing job search and other stuff.
Well, Democrats have a ton of money because my theory is for every one Republican, there are 9 Democrats.
Yeah, but
and we have a ton of money. And the thing is, we raised $40 million for Howard Dean more than anyone else before. And if we didn't have to split our money between 9 silly ask candidates, if all of that money were going to Dean in the first place and you didn't have a Lieberman and a John Edwards and a silly little Gephardt who never said anything coherent,
yeah.
if you didn't have to split it among nine people, we would have had 150, 300, we would have had as much money as the Republicans. So what we have to do as a party is allow for differences, but we need to get a little more, I would say, forceful about determining earlier who our candidate is and putting the money and the power behind that candidate. And I think Dean, as head of the DNC, will cause that transition.
But it's going to take some time. And that's what I keep talking about with people. Every time they see a little happy news item that makes it sound like we're turning the corner, I'm just shaking my head. We haven't turned any corner yet.
What do you think it's going to take? I think it's going to take citizens getting our power the way we normally do.
I think it's going to take pitchforks and torches at this point. I think it's going to take an outside influence. I just don't see how we can combat the fact that the media are just being cowards and our Congress, our leaders in Congress and Senate,
I have an idea,
are being cowards.
I have an idea, Joe. If the nuclear option gets enacted by the Republicans, mm-hmm. why don't we start a letter writing campaign to all the Democrats to literally not show up for work, mm-hmm. to literally walk out of the Senate and the House and just not come back,
just
show the world that the Republicans brute force taking control, and we're not going to put up with it anymore.
They've promised to reach out. You know something? I'm very impressed with Senator Reid because Reid's been like, you want to do this? Let's just get it on. Because somebody else on the blog put it right. He said if they had the votes to do this, they would have done it 2 weeks ago. And they know they don't have the votes to do it. And they're just trying to arm ring as much as possible. And that's why I'm told. And Reid has got the Democrats in line, the Senate Democrats in line. So I'm glad for that. And that's what I'm talking about by leadership. Unfortunately, we don't have anybody of presidential caliber at this point. Governor Dean, I like exactly where he is right now. But he's
actually doing more damage as head of the DNC than he could have as president.
He could have as president. He's actually much
and
more effective.
But I'm here to tell you, Joe, John Conyers, Barbara Boxer, nobody's paying attention. But I think Hillary Clinton is going to have a run against Barbara Boxer in 2008 mm-hmm. because you don't know the people that understand how powerful it was for Barbara to stand up and stand on the side of citizens January 6th. I've never seen any other Democrat show backbone. It is telling that there were eight other Democrats that were going to say, we don't agree with the Ohio results, and they all, eight of them, backed down, and it was only Barbara. In my opinion, she self-selected herself as the true leader of our cause.
Do you think Boxer has a good chance of defeating Hillary in a primary if it came down to that? And do you think Hillary will run? Do you think that's her intention?
She absolutely will run, but you know what? She's been such a kiss-ass to the Republicans, and a lot of people are seeing that.
Okay, question. Okay, this is what happened. And this is another thing I was talking about real quick. In 2006, we have the congressional elections, okay?
The congressional fraud, but go ahead.
Congressional fraud elections. Now, what I'm thinking is that realistically, if the polls really were a reflection of what was going to happen in an election, I think the Republicans would lose 100, 200 seats in 2006. I don't see that happening. And that was another fight I was getting with
did you know that Montana went completely back to paper ballots? Do you know that they're fighting Diebold in California?
Yep.
And we're going to fight and win in Ohio. So the
you
bottom line
will
is...
get reelected in California?
Who?
Arnold?
No, he never got elected the first time.
Yeah, that's true.
They
rigged him into office and...
Do you know there's a recall effort for Schwarzenegger in California?
Again?
No, separately. Isn't that cool?
That's great. That would be really funny if that had happened.
I knew that when Arnold won in California that we were screwed.
That was so rigged. And I'm worried that they're going to try to get the Diebold in California, and that would be a huge
state
to lose.
We're going
to
win. I know about there are probably four lawsuits already. We already won, and we're going to win again, so I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about Ohio, though.
And we're ending on a positive note. That's a positive note. And
there
And I'm always happy that we can do that. Because
Democrats
really
raw.
Even though things are bad now, I think things are going to get better. Anyway, that's going to be it for this show. I want to thank Phyllis Euster for showing up again. And we will have her on from time to time to talk about the election reform issue and keep us posted on all that. And, of course, I will continue to be on speaking truth to power, as it were, and just doing my thing as best I can. So to all my friends at rantradio.com, at whiterosesociety.org, and by the way, Ben Birch is having a fundraiser, so give as much as you possibly can. He really needs your support and your help, because what Ben Birch does at White Rose Society is a really important and wonderful thing. So anyway, for myself, for Phyllis Euster, and for everybody at the Cup of Joe radio show, this is Joe Vecchio saying goodbye till next time. Bye. Mm-hmm.
but Joe. I'll crave a plate of Dave, open a jar of John. Don't put anything on, I'll chug a jug of George. I'll sip a mug of Doug with the creamer of Steve. How many more does that leave? Give me a pot of Scott, heat up a pan of Stan, throw in a handful of Dick. That'll do everything. Open a can of Dan, make a meal of Sam. But don't give me no mo, cause what I really want's a cup of Joe.
The Cup of Joe radio show has been recorded live at the fabulous Studio Al in Decatur, Georgia, and has been produced by Jove Enterprises, Incorporated. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe radio show, is a production of Mr. and Mrs. Vecchio of Brooklyn, New York.
A plate of Dave, creamer of Steve, a mug of Doug, a cup of...